Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Well, the last several election cycles have been plagued with all kinds of tantrums, immaturity, and probably the biggest trend, I think, in our politics over the last decade has been the politics of grievance. Everybody's got a grievance, and everyone's got the story that they're the hardest hit, they've got it worse off, and somehow they need help, and they need to be first in line to get that help. The problem with grievance politics is if everybody's shouting a grievance and how they've been wronged, how in the world can we ever get to a productive conversation about those people who really need help? And how do we actually get that right? Let's begin.
Think you know the news of the day? Think again with Boyd Matheson on KSL News Radio.
As we often say, anger is not an agenda. Grievance is no way to govern. You have to get past all of that, and we want to dig into that on a Monday. And really thrilled to have joining us on the program today, Pamela Paul, opinion columnist at the New York Times, where she writes about culture, politics, and how we live now. And this is incredibly timely. It is a powerful piece called You've Been Wronged, But That Doesn't Make You Right. And Pamela, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This is a great piece. And obviously, we're in this age of grievance politics. And amazingly, the left and the right can do it equally well these days.
Oh, yeah.
So give us a sense of your journey through the land of grievance. And how do we get to the place where we can actually get it right?
Well, I mean, first, to your point that this is an equal opportunity mode of claiming power. On the right, if you look this week, obviously we have the former victim in chief, President Trump, who is in court and continues to send out the message that he is the victim of a witch hunt, that he is being unfairly accused and tried. So he sort of represents that victimhood on the right. Mm. On the left, I think we're all very familiar with the language of oppression and victimhood. And certainly you can see that playing out on campuses where there is this constant tug of war between who is more oppressed, the Palestinians or Jews and Israelis. And there really, you're going to have a hard time sort of proving which one, but more to the point, that doesn't mean that just because you have been oppressed or victimized that you are necessarily correct in whatever it is that you're seeking.
Yeah, I think that's such an important thing. Just because you have been wronged does not make you right in any of this. I think that I just love that whole theme in terms of those who are using this as a lever of power. It's an amazing way to get power. Who would have thought that claiming victimhood and being less than and being powerless would be the strategy to get power?
I often think about this in terms of the schoolyard, right? When I was growing up, which was in olden time of the 80s, the kids that we sort of watched out for were the show-offs, the ones who would say, I'm the best, I go in front, I'm first. And you knew that kid. There were plenty of them, and they would try to get power by showing how strong they were and how much they therefore deserved it, how good they were. And now you really have the opposite tendency. And I think any parent who sees how this operates among young children today knows that, the way to get power is to claim that you have somehow been denied equal access, or that you are somehow, being underrepresented or silenced or denied or marginalized or oppressed, or you have a diagnosis. And this is not to say that none of these things aren't legitimate. There are legitimate grievances that people can have. But what I find interesting is the overwhelming extent of this way of thinking, and really a reversal of that old way of thinking, which was, you know, again, might is right is not right either. But there is a really something interesting to say about our culture that we are constantly looking for whoever has the most to complain about as therefore being the most justified.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting thing to dig into. And I want to unpack that a little bit because I think there's a couple of things going on there. One, you have this everybody's going to be offended. And some people are actually being preemptively offended now before anything ever happens because they know it's coming. So they get preemptively offended. And then you have those. We have a rule at our house that if you have to declare it, you're not it. So when my kids would say, I'm an adult now, it's usually because they were going to do something really childish. But now we have a lot of people who are claiming the grievance, often preemptively claiming that victimhood or grievance as a way to, as you said, position themselves to actually gain power or advantage or resources. How do we change that conversation?
I mean, well, before we get to solutions, because I don't know if we have an easy solution, I just want to build on what you're saying in that, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of that sort of preemptive claiming of vulnerability is because we tie a lot of that to identity, this sort of essentialist idea that, you know, just because I'm a woman, say that somehow, therefore, I am less than. And again, that's really different from what the women's right movement would say, which was really about asserting power, not about claiming, you know, disempowerment. And so it's just a different starting point and a different way of making the case. But in terms of how we address this, I think we're, you know, we have to really look at this from the ground up. And part of the problem is the language of harm. It's this idea that, you know, if you say the wrong thing, if you use the wrong word, if you somehow don't allow certain people to speak as much or speak first or, you know, have some kind of privileged status in the order of speaking, then you are harmed, you know, then by being harmed, you therefore have some legitimate grievance that then needs redress. So I think that's part of it. We've kind of taught young people that the more they can claim a kind of weakness, vulnerability, the more they are owed. And that I really think has to, that whole mentality has to be reconsidered.
Yeah, that is so important. I want to sneak in one last thing before I let you go. This, we could stay on this all day today, especially coming off of a convention political weekend here in the state of Utah, that a lot of grievance being aired over the weekend. But I want to get to one of the crucial things that I found in your piece, and that is how this idea, this approach to gaining power through victimhood and grievance politics actually prevents us from getting to the conversations about those who maybe do have a grievance or have been wronged or have been, you know, not had equal access to the opportunity or the path. And just kind of describe that, because I think it's important for us to kind of lock that in of, hey, when we chase all of this noise, we're actually missing some really important conversations.
We are. And I think one of the big things that we do miss is the voices that are not yelling, the voices that are not, you know, claiming some kind of grievance are often the most overlooked. And, you know, this gets back to, especially with regard to class, I would say, with regard to people who are poor, they're not necessarily on Twitter all day long, you know, or X, you know, acting or performing their grievance. And the loudest voices in the room often don't represent a population. One of the ways I think about this is when you think about disability, for example, you will have a lot of people online using hashtags, talking about, let's say, some kind of disability or mental issue, and they'll have a hashtag actually autistic, and they're all sort of jockeying for more rights or more whatever it is, more power. There are also a lot of people who are very seriously, you know, autistic, who are low functioning, who don't even have the language, let alone the means to be, you know, posting on social media. Those people are probably the most in need in terms of that population. And no one is really speaking up for them on social media. So you really have to look at who's not talking, because those are often the populations that are most vulnerable.
And so important. So often it's those silent folks that are the ones we should be listening to closest. Pamela Paul, opinion columnist at the New York Times. Fantastic piece. A lot for us to think about. And we're going to think again about what we think we know to this whole grievance politics stuff. Pamela, thanks so much for joining us. Great piece.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to stay with this conversation because I think it applies in a lot of different places and spaces. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Think again on Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.